In today's episode, you'll learn about the skilled worker shortage in North America, why it's happening, what are the impacts, and how the social impact industry and professionals can help. Hi everyone, I'm Carl. Welcome to the Social Impact Show, a channel where you get the latest strategies and tips to help you scale and grow your CSR and goodness programs. So today we've got a great guest. Her name is Melissa Hazelwood. She's the Director of Social Impact with Ferguson. Thank you very much, Melissa, for joining us today.
Hey, Carl. Thanks for having me.
So let's get right into this. You know, would you be able to shed some light on, you know, because we're talking about skilled worker shortage today. Can you shed a little light on that shortage across North America?
Carl, so there's about 20 to 30 years where we really can send this, consistent message to young people saying that there was only one path to success in life, and that was through a four-year degree. One of my favorite quotes from our national partner, Mike Rowe Works Foundation, is, "We've glorified the corner office while we unintentionally minimized the people that built the corner office." So subsequently, we have this huge gap of workers with welders and HVAC technicians and plumbers and heavy equipment operators, and we don't have enough people to fill the opportunities out there. So that's kind of where we're at with the skilled trade shortage.
Yeah, and you know what, like, for example, like when I was growing up, that was a big thing. It's right. The only path, or well, from my parents' perspective, is the only path, hey, get your degree, and that was it. But you're right, like you could see from various industries, especially like here in Calgary, where real estate is and oil and gas is pretty big, there is always a skilled trade shortage. Like always, you always hear it, regardless if it's a recession or the economy is doing great. Mm-hmm. So what type of workers are we talking about? Like, is it just like, can you describe a little bit more on the
sure. type? Yeah, absolutely. It's as I mentioned, a lot of them are the traditional skilled trades that we think of, right? So carpenters, contractors, construction workers, plumbers, welders. But there's also a whole nother side of it. There's healthcare workers, right? That was very evident during the pandemic when there weren't enough healthcare workers to go around. And we're not just talking about doctors and nurses. It's everybody that works in a hospital, food service personnel. So all of these roles that don't necessarily need a four-year degree to get into and to be successful and to have a really, you know, lifelong career, there's a huge gap where we just can't fill the roles. And we're still seeing some of that coming out of the pandemic, right? Where there's, you know, when you go to a restaurant, some of them are still closed in certain sections because they don't have enough people to work. And the same thing with hospitals and doctor's offices. So it really spans the spectrum. But when we think about skilled trades careers, we think about folks that need additional certifications or additional training, but don't necessarily need a four-year degree.
So what are some of the causes of this shortage?
Well, I think it's a lot of what, you know, you experienced as a kid, right? Your parents telling you that there was only one path to success, you know, teachers and guidance counselors always pushing one path when in reality there's two. So I think that's the big one. There's some other little things like, you know, we took shop class out of high schools and out of middle schools. And those were really the first avenues that students were, you know, having the opportunity to be exposed to the skilled trade. So I think that was a big one as well. And then one that's not only relegated to the trades, it's this huge mass exit of baby boomers from the workforce. The National Electrical Contractors Association, you know, they released a statistic for every year, 7,000 new electricians are entering the workforce, but 10,000 are retiring. So there's a huge gap there. So I think those are some of the key factors, but I think the big one is just the PR around the trades or the education piece around the trades that, you know, we haven't necessarily done our due diligence with educating the guidance counselors and teachers and parents and really demonstrating that there are two very good paths to success in life.
Now, do you think today, though, like the guidance counselors and the teachers and so on, they can see that shortage and it isn't just that one avenue anymore that, you know, that they're pushing? Is it more like, hey, there's a diverse set of streams of careers that people can get into.
Absolutely. I think that it is getting better in some regard, because I think, again, going back to the pandemic, we're seeing like what is an essential worker, right? Like what can people do where they can be outside and work with their hands and do something that is really meaningful and successful for them. But I think it's dependent upon the school system, really and truly. I think some do it better than others. For instance, in our own backyard, there is a school system where they know that 50% of their students don't go to college. So they have developed a really robust program for students that would like to pursue a trade or a different career or something other than a four-year degree. So I think we're getting better. I still think we have a lot of work to do, but we are getting better.
And I guess one more question on this is, do you think like from a pay perception, that's also changing? Because I think, again, back to when I was growing up, I remember, you know, the perception was, oh, you won't get paid as much as a skilled trade versus somebody who has a college degree. But I don't think that's true anymore.
No, absolutely. You're right. I think, you know, students are coming out of high school and entering in the trades and they're making anywhere from, you know, $40,000 to $60,000 year one. And that is not incurring any student loan debt. And I think that huge number of student loan debt that's floating around right now is scaring a lot of parents and young people. And they're recognizing I don't need to do that. So, yeah, I think the perception is absolutely changing. I think more and more parents, you know, are recognizing that their kids can go and have a really good career without, you know, taking on huge mountains of debt.
With this shortage, let's go back to the shortage. What is the current impact, I guess, today and into the future?
Oh, wow. I mean, they're far reaching. I mean, think about in your everyday life, right? Your toilet breaks or your HVAC goes down. It takes longer to get somebody there. It's more costly to get somebody there to fix it. I think we're seeing increased wait times for, you know, buildings and home repairs. But then going back to other things, healthcare workers, doctor's offices and getting the care that you need, right? It's harder to get in and it's not always readily available. One of the things you go and think about Hurricane Ian. So talk about disaster relief, right? So Hurricane Ian just wiped out a whole island in Florida. It's going to take that community years, if not a decade, to rebuild. We had a number of associates that were impacted by the campfires in California that were several years ago, and they're still rebuilding. So the rebuilding time certainly is a factor.
Do you think though, like the, you know how during the pandemic, there's a lot of people who were sent home and then the rise of remote work. Now with skills trade, I don't know if that's had a massive impact, but has that had an impact in that field and in all those fields? Because like you said, like regardless of a pandemic, our systems, our toilets, our whatever need they still need fixing, there's a lot of things that people still need to show up. Like how has that impacted the shortage?
Yeah, I think it's twofold, really. So you talk about initially who was classified as an essential worker, who still had to go to work, who still had the opportunity to still go to work and function because America's infrastructure still needed taken care of, right? Like we still had to show up there. There's only so much you can do with technology in the skilled trade space that it needs a human being. It needs somebody to actually do the job. But then again, how can we develop technology to alleviate some of those misses or opportunities, I guess? And I think already in the skilled trades, we were pushing some more technology. Like you talk about modular homes, like those were being built at an increasing rate because it's more efficient, right? It's better for the environment. It's built inside. So it helps your home and it also cuts down the cost of housing, right? So I think some of those opportunities in the technology space that, you know, were coinciding with the skilled trades, the pandemic really shined a light on them and it kind of pushed that even further. How can we use artificial intelligence? How can we do a mobile app for technicians that will allow them to be in your home without being in your home? And so, yeah, it's kind of pushing both of those.
So, Melissa, we've been talking a lot about the, like, what are the impacts, but I'm sure there's things that are being done today that are like helping alleviate or trying to help alleviate? What are some of those things?
Absolutely. We're looking at more non-traditional groups. How can we get more women into the trades? Women currently make up about 10% of the construction industry. So how can we alleviate some of the barriers that women face to get into the trades? And so they're developing programs with more services that cater to women, right? So women are typically in charge of childcare. And so a lot of the programs that offer training also offer childcare. We're targeting more veterans, right? So veterans often have a hard time translating their skill sets from their time in the service to what does that look like in civilian life. So we're working on that. And how can we provide them early training as they look to transition out of the service to transition directly into a trade? So there's minimal time in between their two separate careers. There's a number of programs that work with youth and under-resourced communities. They offer the training to the youth to become a builder, a mason, or a carpenter, and then take those skills back into their community to revitalize it. So it's a win-win for both. I think there are a lot of CTE schools that are bringing in employers to address the curriculum of their program. So they talk to the employer and they say, hey, what should we teach so that these students are prepared to take roles within your company right when they graduate? So there's a lot of initial programs happening, but I think we really have to be in this for the long haul. And how can we address this and really rebuild that sustainable pipeline?
Do you see career transitions to skilled trades from other fields? Is that something that's being either encouraged, or is that an avenue that people are looking at too?
Absolutely. I think more students that are graduating with a four-year degree are coming out and they aren't prepared to take a job, or they've just got a desk job where they're not fulfilled and they really didn't follow their passion. Carl, the average age of an apprentice right now is 27 years old, when typically it needs to be around the 17, 18 year old mark. But so you're seeing that 27 year olds are getting into the workforce, you know, in their initial years after college, and they're saying, this isn't for me. And they're making that change.
You know, it's interesting because the reason why I thought about the question, a family friend of ours, he's been, you know, working, you know, moving through TELUS and, you know, rising the ranks there. And I think, you know, one day it was, like he was just tired of what he was doing. So yeah, he became a machinist, you know, became an apprentice. And today he was like, I was just talking to him about a week ago. He's so much happier doing that than what he was doing for, I would say, I don't know, 10, 15 years. So yeah, it's just interesting to see there is that path too.
I think I was talking to a similar circumstance. My cousin is, you know, spent his first year of college in a hotel room because the dorms were full, right? So he was just in there all the time and just realized, I don't want to do this. And now he is studying to be an electrician. So same thing. And he's very, very happy.
So let's bring back to social impact. So how can social impact and social impact professionals actually help alleviate this shortage?
Good question. You know, the saying goes, a rising tide lifts all ships. And I think a lot of companies and a lot of social impact professionals are engaging in workforce development dialogue. So how can we all work together? I mean, I think it's one of the things that we as social impact professionals do really well. We like to work together. We like to collaborate. We like to partner. So how can we collectively work together, find the right partners to really move the needle in that space? And I think another piece of it needs to be about the broader conversation of education, right? How can we pull workforce development for all careers, for all sectors, into that education conversation and better prepare students for careers for them that make sense for them so they're happy and successful in their careers?
So how has Ferguson supported skilled trade?
So we've done a number of things to address the PR side of it. We've worked with partners to offer scholarships to promote this parallel path, if you will, right, to a four-year degree. It's wonderful. It's successful. It might be for you. And so really addressing that with some of our partners. And I think also one of the things that Ferguson does really well in the social impact space, and a lot of our peer companies do as well, is we try to show up authentically, right? So how can we use our experience and our expertise and our resources to help students? How can we provide the tools and the trainings and the consumables that they need to learn with their hands? Because that's what they want to do, right? That's why they want to promote this or pursue this career in the trades, if you will. They want to work with their hands. They want to be active. So what can we do? How can we partner with our customers and our suppliers and our vendors to provide the tools and what the students need to learn and to grow in their field? So we're trying to really rebuild the pipeline of skilled trades professionals in the United States and work with our partners to move that needle.
So Melissa, we could talk about this for a while. Fascinating topic. I know there's a lot to be done about skilled trade shortage, but if any of our audiences want to connect with you, what's the best place to reach you?
Absolutely. I would be happy to connect with them. They can email us. That's the best way to go about it, at Ferguson Cares, all one word, all lowercase, at ferguson.com.
Thank you for listening to the Social Impact Show. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Then visit benevity.com to access some of the resources mentioned in this episode, along with tons of other insights to help you grow your program. Music provided by Ikeson. For questions or topics you want us to cover, reach us at podcast@benevity.com. Until next time, be a force for good.